This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Rays Radio Network proudly presents This Week in Rays Baseball.
Broken bat looper, Adams calling for it, and the Rays have won the series against the Dodgers.
Coming up, we'll recap the action from this past week, take a look around Major League Baseball, and sit down for in-depth interviews with the biggest names in the game.
Swung on and mashed deep to left field, and it's in there for extra bases. Up against the wall it goes. Walls is home, and the Rays lead 5-4 in the seventh. A pinch hit. RBI double for Yandy Diaz.
This Week in Rays Baseball starts right now.
And welcome to our latest program, everybody. My name is Chris Adams-Wall, and we are so happy to have you with us. In this week's show, we'll chat with Rays right-hander Aaron Civale about his first full season with Tampa Bay. Then we'll check in with Rays president Matt Silverman and get an update on the historic gas plant district development. After that, Rays hitting coach Chad Mottola will give us a ring from Chicago and provide us with an inside look into Tampa Bay's offense. And finally, we'll wrap it all up with some analysis from Rays beat reporter for MLB.com, Adam Berry. But we begin with Aaron Civale, who began by telling us about his big off-season trip to Switzerland.
It was incredible, something that we were looking into throughout the year and then kind of had a rough idea of what we wanted to do and then got home and narrowed down the details and kind of got there as quick as we could to avoid being too cold.
But why Switzerland? You didn't want to go anywhere else?
Just had an itinerary that covered... Probably could have done a couple days less, but wanted to make sure we were enjoying everything and didn't feel rushed. But found an itinerary and pieced together a few extra things, a few less things, and just fit that plan of 14 days.
Well, I'm half Swiss, at least half Swiss, so I like that you went there. What was your favorite part about that trip?
It's a town called Adelboden. Pretty small, off the beaten path, but it was just unbelievable view. Took a gondola up to a mountain. There was a swing kind of overlooking the whole town. Just so many views out there that were incredible. And it's just there's a lot of cool places on this earth, and that's certainly one of them.
And then you got to go to the Dominican Republic, obviously, a couple of months ago. And I think there was rumors spreading around that, oh, Aaron Civale's a big world traveler, but then you shut that down real quick. You said, no. I went to Switzerland this offseason, and that was my first time to Europe, right?
That's correct. First time I left the country was after college, went to Canada to visit one of my buddies that I went to college with. I've been to a couple of the islands since then, but definitely going to be going back to Europe at some point.
Absolutely, yeah. I was going to ask you, what's next up on the trip itinerary there?
Nothing in Europe yet. Got really close with the Nailers over in Cleveland. They do a huge family trip every year. 2 years ago, I went to Jamaica with them. Going back to Jamaica with them this offseason, so be looking forward to that.
Well, let's talk about your first full season with the Rays. I think you look like a completely different guy so far this season compared to the one who came over at the trade deadline from the Cleveland Guardians. Do you feel like a different guy?
I think just when you can go into a season knowing where you're going to be and knowing a lot of the guys coming in, I think you get traded at the deadline and you're in that compete mode and you get put in an environment where you don't know too many people and there's a lot to focus on. And at the end of the day, I was just trying to make sure I was focusing my best on baseball while also handling the transition, just coming over during the middle of the season, kind of without any warning. That's the reality of the game that we play. It can happen, and it does happen, and I'm not the first, and I won't be the last. But just coming in, knowing everybody, and being that much more comfortable, and definitely a little different vibe.
Well, just how difficult was that, though, when you got traded last year? I mean, we talked shortly thereafter, but you're probably looking around like this is a completely different organization. You had only spent time in Cleveland's organization prior to that trade.
Was it challenging?
Yeah, I think if anybody told you the first time wasn't difficult, they'd be lying to you. That was, like you said, first time being into a new organization. Definitely a lot of friendly faces and a lot of deep relationships were had over there in Cleveland, and still continue those for sure. But anytime without warning, you're kind of uprooted from whatever it is you're doing. It's a difficult task in its own right. And luckily, the feel over here was great and very similar. So from that aspect, it was not much of an adjustment. It was more just adjusting to a new schedule and new coaches and just a different feel. But at the end of the day, everyone else made it as easy as possible. And I've seen the benefits of that this season coming in and just continuing to be myself and continuing to get to know everybody.
When you did get traded and you were transitioning over here to the Rays, how much did your wife help? How much did your dog, Stetson West, help?
Yeah, so fortunately at the time, my wife and dog were back at our house that we live in the off season. So they did not have to do too much. Got a bunch of help from the clubbies back in Cleveland, helped back up in my apartment what I couldn't do in that short window that I was able to fly back to Cleveland and pack some stuff up from my apartment quickly as a starting pitcher. Didn't need to be there that next day. So that was definitely nice. And I pitched the day before I got traded, so I had a little window in between. Yeah, when something like that happens, there's a lot of behind-the-scenes work, and definitely appreciate everyone that helped throughout that process.
Well, you are a lot more comfortable now, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I'm sure having a guy like Phil Maton here, that certainly helped.
Yeah, I think all around within my family, my wife is very close with his wife, and my dog is a corgi, and his dog is a corgi, so it's cool. And you can play with somebody, get close with them, and then down the line get reunited. It doesn't always happen. It usually doesn't happen at all. So it's cool to have that. Meet so many new faces in this game and build so many relationships. Some of them are just for that season. Some of them are for a long time. And it's always cool when you can cross paths with someone you got really close to.
But all of you guys lived with each other, right, during COVID for a little while?
Yeah, so when the shutdown happened, wasn't really sure what the hotel situation was going to be, if there was going to be a lockdown or what was going to go on. Phil and Phil's wife, Caitlin, they opened up their home to us. They had a couple extra rooms, and they said, yeah, no, come stay with us. They didn't know how long it was going to be. We stayed there for 2 weeks and then ended up staying out in Arizona, got an Airbnb. Relationships started then. My wife had not met either of them, but they took us in with open arms, and to this day, very close with them.
And so how excited were you then when you found out that the Rays were going to sign Phil Maton?
Yeah, for sure. We had been in contact with them throughout the offseason, obviously, and knew that the Rays were one of the teams that they were interested in and that was interested in them as well. But it's, again, beyond what Phil brings to the team as a pitcher. He's just good presence. He goes about his business very professionally, and then off the field, just to have that type of relationship, that comfort continues to make myself comfortable, and I think for him, he's fit right in as well.
You guys are both master spinners of the baseball. So my guess is, you guys talk about that, like how you manipulate the ball on some of these breaking pitches?
Not necessarily about how we do it, but more just understanding how those pitches are working or how to complement the pitches with each other. And yeah, I think at the end of the day, the word that is key here is manipulate. That's something that we both do really well, is manipulate the baseball.
Let's talk about your prep, because I was talking with Adam Berry, the Rays beat reporter for MLB.com. He said you're an incredibly meticulous guy. You're a visual learner. Can you walk us through some of that? And he said something about how you wish you had kind of learned that in school so you could have applied it, right?
Sure. I think math and science is something that always came a little bit more naturally to me, which is numbers-based. There's some visuals to go with. There's whether it's a chart or if you're doing a lab in science, you're filling out a table or there's a graph that's produced. When it came to English and history, I definitely struggled with that. Having know what I know now, I think if I were to have listened to some more books or had videos to go along with the English or history stuff, that's just how my brain processes and retains information. Kind of have to have two-factor authentication to remember or to trigger a memory. So applying that to baseball, it's whether I'm looking at a graph or a video or a guy's swing path, trying to have a couple things that trigger other memories is what I'm trying to do at this point. I know how my brain works, and it's not one that can plan too far in advance. It's more about assessing what's happening right in front of me and going from there. And that works in complement with the catchers and myself. We're just trying to take a game plan going in, and then if we make adjustments, we make adjustments. If we keep doing what we're thinking about doing and actually going out there and executing, then we keep doing it. It's definitely something that I'm glad I figured out through the process, and it takes time to figure that stuff out.
Not surprising at all from a Loomis Chafee alum, right? Let's talk about you calling your own pitches, though, because that's pretty unique. I feel like not all that many pitchers do it throughout Major League Baseball. How long have you done that, though, and why do you do that? Is that something that you've developed over time?
I think with the capability of doing it, it's just nice to have the option. Pitchers can have the buttons on them now, so I like to have that option available and keep it as an open line of communication between me and their Ben or Pinto, whoever's catching that day. And I think as of right now, I'm probably calling 20 to 30% of the pitches prior to receiving anything. Sometimes I'll have my finger on a button ready to press it if I'm planning on shaking. Hopefully, most of the time, I'm just letting the flow of the game take control and just going with whatever the catcher, and we're in that flow state. But just to have the option, I throw six different pitches, and there's different locations involved with most of those pitches. So with the pitch clock now, just trying to figure out a way to avoid getting down to one or two and having to throw a pitch I don't necessarily want to, or a location I'm not trying to throw it to. So we're using that to our advantage and going from there.
What are your thoughts on the pitch comm, though? I mean, it sounds like you're a fan, but it hasn't been around for all that long.
Yeah, to be honest, at first I was not a huge fan of the idea. Knowing that I'm a visual guy, I like seeing the fingers down, and I had that conversation with Austin Hedges back in Cleveland. And then the first time I tried it, I was like, okay, I understand this concept, and hearing it is still fine for me. I think definitely my first impressions of it were negative, but after having tried it, I think it's a really cool tool to have.
And I think you wear it on your belt, right? Like, and have you memorized where all of the buttons are? Because whenever I see you reach over there to your side, I'm like, well, he's not looking at the thing. I think he just is going by touch.
Yeah, I know where each pitch is on the button, and it's inside one of the belt loops. So I had the guys in the clubhouse sew an extra loop around it, and I just slide it into there.
How about that? And how do you feel your season is going so far? I think you've looked really impressive. I mean, the Yankees start maybe a little difficult, but that was just one inning, really.
Sure. I think stuff-wise, I'm in a really good spot. It's just at this point about going out there and executing and competing. Put myself in a little bit of a tricky situation there with the Yankees. Was working around those three guys, trying to be super careful to get through the inning, and then three pitches in a row, first one just too much plate, and then the next few I feel like pretty good location-wise, and they just saw enough pitches that day and put the bat on the ball. When you put it in play, a lot of times good things happen. So some self-inflicted, some good location on my part, and just being beat. But stuff-wise, I feel like I'm pretty good and happy with my ability to go out there and compete. And at the end of the day, just trying to give innings and give the team a chance to win. And minus a couple pitches in New York, I feel like I've done a really good job with that.
I think you have, too. Do you have personal goals for this season?
Nothing concrete. I think every year my goal is to have as many innings as I can. I think that 200 number is always a huge accomplishment. If you're doing that, it means you're taking care of your body, you're pitching effectively, and you're probably giving your team a chance to win. It's a rare number to achieve in today's game, and it takes a lot to get to that number, but I think just at the end of the day, innings is my goal.
And finally, we know that you pitched at Northeastern in Boston. I've asked just about everybody I've had on this program this question, though. How much do you feel the game of baseball has changed, and perhaps even for you, more specifically, pitching since your time in college and even through your first couple of years in the Guardians organization with Cleveland? Because it seems like the changes have been drastic at best, right?
Oh, for sure. I don't even think TrackMan or Rapsodo were around when I was in high school. And 10 years ago now, I was playing my freshman season at Northeastern, and there were only a couple stadiums that had radar guns. We didn't even have one at our home field. So that was something that didn't get implemented until after I left as a permanent fixture. We had guys in the stands charting and coming in after the game, whatever, showing what those were.
Spin rate non-existent too, right?
Right. First time I was kind of exposed to that was in summer ball when some of the stadiums did have them. But yeah, I think the way the game is played now and the way kids are raised, they're always chasing certain numbers, or they're chasing spin rates or velo or vertical or horizontal movement. And it's probably pretty easy to get lost in all of that, especially when you're developing physically and still learning mentally how to work through the game of baseball and just going through all those experiences. There's so much available now, which can be a good thing if you have the right guidance, but it's definitely easy to get lost in. I think being introduced to that in a healthy and impactful way coming into pro ball was something that Cleveland did really well, and something that they do well here also. But there's so much information out there, it's very easy to get lost.
Yeah, so how do you parse through that information and harness it to the best of your ability if there's so much available?
I think for me, it's more understanding what is my norm, what does it look like during that day? Is it outside my norm in a good way? Is it outside my norm in a bad way? And then figuring out how to use that to my advantage. So it's more just, for me, understanding what normal looks like, what the average looks like, and then taking that information and either continuing. Once I'm in the game, I'm in the game. There's not much you can do to change it. There's going to be days where you feel great and all your stuff is right in line, and those are the days where it's a little bit easier, and there's going to be days where you're not feeling good and you got to just work with what you got that day. And I think those numbers just help you to understand what's actually coming out of your hand versus what you might be used to or what's intended. And then that's continuing conversations with catcher or pitching coach, whoever it is. This is a game of adjustments. Everyone's said that for now over 100 years. We just have more quantifiable data about what's actually coming out of pitchers' hands, and just not overdoing it, but understanding what is beneficial for you and what normal looks like for you, and then going from there.
But do you think it's fair to say that you have embraced these technological revolutions throughout the game of baseball?
Yeah, I think it definitely helps. I like to use it as a supplementary tool versus a guiding tool. Very rarely do I try to create something on those metrics. It's more just, hey, what is happening when I do X? What is happening when I do Y? And then taking that information and understanding what is the range that my body works in and my arm produces, and then taking that information and trying to understand what is a positive target to look towards, what does a miss look like when I'm not throwing my curveball with as much depth as I need to, then I might have to start that pitch a little lower. Just working through all of those little nuances.
We appreciate what has been a very enlightening conversation for me and for our listeners, I'm sure. Aaron Civale, thanks so much for joining us on This Week in Rays Baseball. Best of luck out there the rest of the season.
Appreciate it. Thank you for the time.
And we'll go to our first break, but when we come back, we'll hear from Rays President Matt Silverman and get an update on the historic gas plant district development. Plus, we'll hear from Rays hitting coach Chad Mottola, and finally, Rays beat reporter for MLB.com, Adam Berry, live at Guaranteed Rate Field in Chicago. That's all coming up next.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
On the Rays Baseball Network.
Continue on this week in Rays Baseball, and we're joined now by one of the Rays presidents, Mr. Matt Silverman. Matt, thanks so much for joining the show. We appreciate it.
Happy to be here. Happy to be talking about some good news.
Yeah, absolutely. So here we are at the end of April, and obviously before the season started, we all talked with you. It was Andy Fried, Neil Solons, and myself with you, and Brian Auld, and I thought now might be a pretty good time for an update on the historic gas plant development project. How is everything going, and where are we in terms of timeline now?
We actually feel like we have a real timeline. You know, it's been theoretical as we're heading towards votes, and now we have some dates on the calendar for public meetings, what are called COW meetings, Committee of the Whole meetings for the city council, and ultimately the votes for the approval. This week, we reached a really important milestone in that we finalized our development agreement between the Hines Rays Partnership and the City of St. Petersburg. Those documents are now out in the public. The City Council has 2 weeks to review it, and then we're going to have our first COW meeting on May 9th to discuss that as we look ahead for the final vote in June.
So what are some of the other key dates that we can look forward to? I know you just mentioned May 9th, but I imagine there's some other ones coming up soon also.
Yeah, May 23rd would be the next COW meeting where we would be discussing the ballpark agreements. And then 2 weeks after that would be the city council vote to approve all of the agreements and give us the green light that we're here to stay and that we have a ballpark project to build and a development to build. And you know, at that point, will be a time for celebration and time to get to work on a really, really big project.
Is there anything that Rays fans can do to help leading up to these key dates?
There's been a lot of public support that's been voiced, you know, in support of the project, in support of the development, and just the importance of the Rays being here in St. Petersburg, Pinellas County, and Tampa Bay. And there can't be enough of that type of support voiced by our fans and the residents of St. Petersburg and Pinellas County. Whether that's writing a letter to city council or to the mayor, it can be writing a letter to the editor of different newspapers and publications. And you know, if fans are looking for more information, they can go to raysbaseball.com/here to stay to get all the updates on what's going on. But we want our fans informed and we want them showing their support for this project. It's been invaluable to date to get us to where we are, and it can help push us over the edge and get these votes approved and this project greenlit.
You mentioned one of the Rays' big partners during this entire operation, and that's Hines. Can you talk about just how integral all of the partners have been during this entire process?
We have a great group of partners on the development side, not just Hines, but our architect or master planner, Gensler. We have so many different consultants and participants, architects, landscape architects. They've all participated in putting together what is an incredible development plan. And the idea is to have a gathering spot. It's not just a baseball stadium. It's a destination for everyone in the city and the county to go. It's a place to shop. It's a place to hang out on a lawn. There's hotels, there's bars, restaurants, office buildings, there's green space, affordable housing, performing arts center, medical office, all of these things in a planned community. And it's something that St. Petersburg doesn't have today. And it's because of all of these different people coming together and creating something that we have this sense of place in this incredible district that can go around, surround the ballpark. So, you know, without Hines, we wouldn't be here today, but there, that team extends to so many local partners, and it really is, you know, a group effort. I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about Ms. Gwendolyn Reese and the input and advice and the the participation of the descendants from the gas plant district as we have formed these plans. And we make sure that we properly honor the past and make sure that it's a prosperous future for everyone on this site.
Obviously, getting a new ballpark is extremely exciting in addition to the entire historic gas plant development. But I'm just curious, Matt, is there anything that you are personally excited about with everything that's about to come in?
Yeah, I love how everything is coming together. And we're planning to build something that would not be here if not for the ballpark. If not for the ballpark, you're probably not building an office building, and you're probably not building a hotel. And because of those things, you have retail and shops that can go along Booker Creek. All these things fit together because you know that 2 million or so people are going to come to the baseball stadium every year, that we're going to have all of these events. And that's the beauty of what we're planning. But it's not happening without baseball. And when it comes down to it, this is going to be an incredible place to watch a baseball game. We can't wait to show our fans the updated renderings, what this ballpark is going to look like, what it's going to feel like to be a fan inside, and how different and how much better it is than what we have today. It's going to be something unique within baseball. We think the best baseball experience possible, and we're really excited to present those plans in the coming weeks.
I know that you've been with the Tampa Bay Rays for a long time, Matt. Just how personally excited are you for this entire development?
I couldn't be more excited. I when I started, I was in my late 20s and unmarried. Now with my family, wife, and three kids, and thinking about my daughters growing up in St. Pete and having this as part of the community and knowing that the future is even brighter for them, that's what gets me excited. We have a whole organization here that has been working on this project off and on for 15 plus years, and it's great to see it right there on the precipice, and we're so close and couldn't be more excited about it.
And why is it so important, or why was it so important for the Rays to not only stay in Tampa Bay, but to remain in St. Petersburg?
It's home, and it feels like home, and we are going to make our home ballpark an incredible place for our players, our fans, for our community, and that goes and that extends beyond just the ballpark itself. And when we think about what this project can mean for the community, it's creating a district and a type of energy that we really don't have in many parts of the area. It's going to be a special place. It's going to have a soul to it. And it's going to be the gathering spot for so many people. You say, oh, where can we meet? Oh, we're going to meet in the plaza right outside the ballpark. Oh, what are we going to do? Well, we can do anything. You know, if you want to go to a museum, you can go to a museum. If you want to go walk along the creek, you can walk along the creek. If you want to go get a cup of coffee, a great lunch, dinner. Oh, your aunt and uncle are in town. They're staying at the hotel. It's really special to have this type of opportunity. We're appreciative of the mayor for his confidence and the city's confidence in the team that we've put together. And, you know, this has been a year and a half in the making since we submitted our plan to where we are today. We've been working hand in glove with the city for a year and a half to put this together. And it's an even better plan than when we started 18 months ago.
Have you learned anything personally from going through all this? Obviously, I know you're not an architect. And, you've never built a stadium before, but I'm sure that there's a lot that you've taken away from this.
We've had a lot of practice in trying to build stadiums. We certainly designed more than our fair share at this point. This has given us an opportunity to really think about what a baseball team can mean to a community. And it's not just about the 81 home games and the playoffs, although that's really important. And, you know, the psychic benefits that they come with having a baseball team, but we're creating a destination, and we have it in a very small sense today, but what we can do with this site and with this planned community is going to be incredible. And that's going to take the baseball team and our city to a different level.
I haven't even been with the organization for a full year. You've been here a lot longer than I have, Matt. Can you talk about the Tampa Bay region as a whole and why that is so special to you?
This is a great place to live, work, and play. I hope you've seen that in your short time here. And it's only gotten better in the 20 years that I've been here. It's grown in a way that there's more commerce, there's more business, but it still has its small town charm, especially St. Petersburg. It has its quirkiness. It has, and that's something that we want to embrace with this project. You know, 20 years ago, Stu decided he wanted to invest in this team and own this team. And it was a large part because of Tampa Bay. He thought this is a great place that's going to continue to grow, that Florida is going to grow. He's right about that. And what we've seen in just the last few years is the growth trajectory is even greater. And we're even more confident about planting our flag and being here for the next 50 plus years.
And I know you've been asked this multiple times, but when is the goal or the goal date for the stadium, the ballpark rather, to open?
It's going to open for the 2028 season, hopefully with a few months to spare. If we have to get that right, which means a groundbreaking at the end of this year or early next year to put us on track to do that. And with these votes that are coming up, we'll be able to meet that timeline and say goodbye to Tropicana Field at the end of 2027 as we raise another World Series banner. And then we transfer those banners over to the new ballpark and open that up in March or April of 2028.
And last question for you, Matt, are you going to be nostalgic at all closing down shop here at Tropicana Field?
Talk to me in a couple of years. And yes, yeah, it will be. And I, you know what? I actually think our fans, as we build the new one and they see it, you know, coming up out of the parking lots and it's starting to get closer to being finished, the nostalgia for Tropicana Field will run high. And I think we're going to have a lot of people, even more fans, coming to the games those last couple of years as they sort of save a fond farewell to this building that got baseball here somehow got Major League Baseball to St. Petersburg and Tampa Bay and allowed this next phase of the franchise to exist.
Well, we can't thank you enough, Matt Silverman, for joining us on This Week in Rays Baseball. Best of luck going forward. And again, if you want to learn more, you can go online, the Rays website, and listen to our Here to Stay podcast. There's so much information on there, but Matt, thanks again. And we will talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, Chris.
And we really appreciate Rays President Matt Silverman for carving some time out for us on today's program. Coming up, our conversation with Rays hitting coach Chad Mottola. Stay with us. We're coming right back on the Rays Baseball Network.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, we continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and I'm joined now via telephone all the way up in Chicago by Chad Mottola, the Rays hitting coach. And Motor, thanks so much for joining us. We know you're a busy guy.
All right, yeah, pretty busy right now, but hopefully it's all for good reason.
Absolutely. So let's talk first and foremost about your offseason. We didn't have a chance to catch up with you in spring training. It's a little like asking somebody or telling somebody Happy New Year in February, but anyway. Did you do anything fun over the off season?
Yeah, I got to hang out with my family. I have a son who's a senior in high school and a daughter who's a sophomore in high school, both heavily involved in sports. So it's nice just to catch up and be a dad and get back in their life and kind of reset.
Well, how was spring training for you? I know it was long. It always is. It's 6 weeks. But how was it for you personally? And then did anybody stand out for you on the Rays? I imagine Jonathan Aranda would be high on your list.
Yeah, he made some adjustments coming in. It was a pretty unique spring training in the sense that we went to Dominican, which kind of took away an off day and then 2 days of travel, so it was a little different feeling for that. So probably a little more tired towards the end than usually, but guys made some adjustments, some good and some bad. That's part of it, guys exploring in the off season, trying to get better, and then you come back and you feel where you're at based off the pitching. Sometimes you go and work in drills and routines and things that work in the cage, and all of a sudden live pitching changes everything. So it's all with good intentions. Like I said, some good, some bad.
The Rays are hovering around 500 right now. You've been with the club a long time, and I talk about this on the post-game show all the time. The 2021 squad, I believe, was 19-19 in the middle of May. We're not even there. How challenging has this year been for you personally, though, as a hitting coach? I think we've seen a lot of good, and I think we've seen some guys struggling right out of the gate. But for you, just how difficult has this season been for you?
It's just part of the job. We're right around 500, and we're obviously not playing up to our potential at all. So that's, I guess, a good thing to be hanging around when you're not playing well. So it gives us something to work on, and it's still we're not even done with the first month, so there's no panic in here. We know the talent we have. It's just a matter of putting it together. And maybe we're trying a new strategy this year of slow playing at the beginning to be ready in the playoffs.
Talk about two of the better hitters on the Rays, Yandy Diaz, who obviously won the batting title last year, and Randy Arozarena. Yandy, I think, looks like he's starting to turn a corner. We know that he's been scuffling a little bit, but I think the at-bats, at least during this past week, have looked much stronger. Even Randy Arozarena hit that home run against the Tigers, and it looks like he's starting to turn it around also. I'm just wondering, what have you seen from those guys? And when guys of that talent, players who are that skilled at hitting, are struggling, how do you approach that situation, and what do you do to try to get them out of those ruts?
Well, it's good to have a history with these guys so you know kind of what gets them back centered, what gets them going mentally along with physically. So they're getting there in different ways. Yandy's definitely kind of turned the corner in the last week, so with speed off bat. Still want to get the ball off the ground a little bit more, but he's actually touching the ball at least the right way. And then you have Randy, who's done some mechanical things that haven't really translated. So now we just got to get back to baseline. But anytime these struggles happen in the beginning of the year, it's so much more magnified because they don't have the past stats to kind of keep them afloat. So the 0 for 10s, the 0 for 15s kind of a little bit more glaring, but if these come in June, it's a little more quiet. So it's one of those things, anytime you struggle early on, no matter who you are, you always press a little bit too much trying to get out of it and one at bat or one game rather than just letting the process take care of itself.
You spoke about your familiarity with both of those guys, Yandy Diaz and Randy Arozarena. When you see them struggling, do you have confidence that they're going to get out of it just because you've dealt with them for so long?
Yes, it's like there's a human side to these guys that, for right or wrong reason that everybody forgets about, they are superstars and they should be held to a different standard. But at the same time, that when they show the human side, you remind them that, yeah, this game's tough and there's going to be stretches like this, but there's a reason why you are who you are. And I have no concern, but like I said, it's a little tougher when you're standing between the lines and you're going through it. But as far as it's much easier for me that I can look 2 weeks in advance, 2 months in advance, 2 years in advance and know that they'll be fine. But in the heat of the moment, they just want to contribute right away. And when the team's not winning, you probably press a little bit more.
Talk about some of the newer faces. Ahmed Rosario was a guy who was not with the Rays at the beginning of spring training. He was signed in the middle of spring training, 1 year, $1.5 million. I think he's really taken that opportunity and run with it. I mean, it's no secret he's been one of the more clutch hitters the Rays have had. He had that 14-game hitting streak that came to an end, but still has a bevy of base hits. He was leading the American League in hitting at one point earlier this week. What have you seen from Ahmed Rosario, and what has impressed you so much about him?
Just the way he's driven to work. He's a pro. He's got some years under his belt. He knows how to get ready for the game. He knows how to prepare. And more importantly, he's getting opportunity probably a little more than we planned on with B-Lau, J-Lo out. So there's openings in the lineup, and he's taking advantage of it.
And what about Richie Palacios, the guy who was with the St. Louis Cardinals organization last season, came over in that trade for Andrew Kittredge in January. He's had some big moments too.
Yeah, he's very educated in his swing. He's committed in his thoughts, and when somebody walks in the door that advanced with their plan, it's real easy to kind of meet them where they're at and share ideas. And he has a pretty good opinion of where he wants to be. We'd always don't have to agree, but at least you get feedback immediately. So the relationship builds pretty fast. So when guys have plans, it's a lot easier to work with them the first year rather than kind of exploring and guessing.
And what are you working on with the hitters collectively right now, Motor? I mean, is that even something that you guys do? I know every individual is different. Everyone has a different approach at the plate. But is there a message that you're trying to instill in the hitters as a whole?
I think we just got to get back in the zone. Like I said, it's a lot of people pressing, trying to do too much. Even last night, expanding the zone in counts that you shouldn't, and working at bats. And if you have to pass the baton, let the next guy do the job. It comes from a good place of everybody wanting to do a little bit more. But if we just get back to having one at bat at a time, and things will take care of themselves.
I've asked a number of coaches on the Rays staff this question. I have not asked you this question, though, as of yet, but here it comes. How much do you think the game of baseball has changed, and how much do you think hitting has changed since you became the Rays hitting coach 8 years ago?
Well, everything goes through changes. I mean, baseball is not immune to that, and just the way pitchers are throwing now and not pitching, and the way they're using and kind of going out and blowing all their stuff in one inning or three innings as a starter, it's definitely evolved into throwing rather than pitching, and we have to make adjustments and working at bats better that way. When you actually have a guy with command, it's a different feeling. So it's one of those things that everybody trains differently, but it's still the same game of baseball. You still have to play properly, but maybe some approaches have to change.
Is it fair to say, with how hard guys are throwing and the amount of spin on some of these pitches, that it's never been more difficult to be a hitter in Major League Baseball?
Well, that's where you can see both sides. Guys are spinning it, and the breaking balls are different, but they're not locating. So you could face a Greg Maddux and not see a pitch over the plate all day and see 12 pitches, or you can go out here and see five right down the middle. They get there different ways. Maybe they're 100, but they're in places to hit. So it's kind of a catch that you could argue both sides of it, but there's definitely things to be taken advantage of the way guys are just throwing now.
Did you have goals for this team at the beginning of the year, Motor? And do you have goals now at this point in the season when we're about a month in?
Yeah, just to win. I mean, that's the main goal. That's the way you have better at-bats. That's the way you end up with better numbers at the end of the year. It's to win the game, and then you take care of everything else takes care of itself.
And I'll leave you with this last question for you. I hear a lot about, this guy has a good approach, this guy has not had a good approach to the plate. Can you just define what approach means for a hitter and tell our listeners exactly what that entails, like having a good approach or having a bad approach at the plate?
It's swinging at strikes and taking balls. I mean, that's as simple as it can be, but everybody has a different way of getting there. It's hunting zones, it's hunting speed, it's something that maybe mechanically that lets you see the ball better. There's a different way that each guy thinks, and that's what you have to respect. But at the end of the day, it's swinging at strikes and taking the balls.
All right, well, we so appreciate the time, Motor. We know you're a busy guy, but thanks so much for joining us on This Week in Rays Baseball, and best of luck the rest of this weekend and the rest of the road trip.
All right, sounds great. Thanks for having me.
And we really appreciate Chad Mottola's insight on today's episode. Before the Rays and Chicago White Sox get together for the series finale at Guaranteed Rate Field on the South Side. And speaking of Guaranteed Rate Field, we're going there live to talk to Adam Berry, the Rays beat reporter for MLB.com. And Adam, how has the weekend been for you so far? You enjoying it up there in the Windy City?
It's been just fine for me, Chris. Thanks for having me on. The weather was certainly nicer yesterday and today than it was for the series opener, and ready to get this one underway here.
I hope if you haven't been yet, you've checked out Portillo's. I definitely recommend the Italian sandwich there with the hot peppers and the chocolate cake shake. Complete stranger told me to do that once, and I've never looked back. Anyway, it's been great for you, which is awesome. It has not been great for Tampa Bay, so we have to ask, what in the world is going on up there?
Yeah, I mean, they're just not playing great baseball. It's kind of the long and short of it. I asked Kevin Cash before the game kind of what he makes of the team exactly a month into the season, and he said, you know, he kind of feels like they're fortunate to even be where they are right now just based on the fact that they haven't played to their capability. You know, they're dealing with a lot of injuries, which affects your depth, which affects the guys that you have on the field. You know, and is not necessarily the group that they had planned to have out there. And they're just not playing very crisp. You know, when your stars aren't your stars, like we've seen Randy Arozarena and Yandy Diaz struggle, you're going to have a hard time. You know, they're getting good performances from guys like Richie Palacios and Ben Roethlisberger. Starting pitching is generally doing its job. Obviously, Aaron Civale didn't have the best outing last night. But you're just seeing kind of uncharacteristic, unusual, un-Rays-like stuff from the defense, from the bullpen, from the lack of timely hitting. And it's really just kind of all coming together the last couple of days against a White Sox team that hadn't won two games in the same week before this season, much less two games in a row, and really just kind of been what would feel like an early low point to this Rays season.
What is the vibe up there right now, Adam? You're around the players. You're around the team. It is only April 28th, right? I mean, it's not like the Rays had a postseason spot they were trying to lock up, and then all of a sudden they've lost back-to-back games to one of the worst teams in baseball, at least record-wise. What is the vibe around the clubhouse at the moment?
Generally more positive because exactly what you said. It is April. They know they've got a long way to go. They know they're not at their healthiest and at their best right now, and yet they have hung in there to be, you know, two games below 500 heading into this series finale. So they've done enough things well, and they have enough guys coming back at some point. And there's enough talent in the clubhouse, proven talent, guys like Yandy and Randy who have certainly done it before and you would have to believe are going to do it again, to think that they're going to bounce back from this. You know, they went through a brutal stretch last July where they didn't look like themselves. They had a tough time, and they bounced back from that really well despite a ton of adversity that they were dealing with in terms of injuries and absences and guys not playing all that well during that month of July. So it's a group that's done it before. They have confidence that they're better than they've shown so far. And, you know, they're kind of taking the optimistic approach that, you know, it's not important to play your best. At the start of the season, it's important to be at your best, you know, heading down the stretch into September and ideally the playoffs. But, you know, these games count, too, even if it's hard to maybe draw major significant conclusions from what we've seen so far. These games count, too, especially in a tough division like the American League East. So they know it's time to get it going here soon.
I was hosting the post-game show last night, and we had a bunch of callers wondering why we hadn't heard from Rays manager Kevin Cash. It was just a coincidence. We had a little miscommunication. He did address the media, but I'm also told that he did not air the team out last night. So he did talk to you guys. What did he have to say? Obviously, he pulled Jose Siri from the game for a non-injury-related reason, but what did Kevin Cash have to tell you guys after the game last night?
Yeah, there was no post-game meeting or anything like that. He addressed the assembled media, by which I mean myself and Mark Topkin from the Tampa Bay Times, and we asked him about the Jose Siri decision because it was pretty obvious that he was taken out of the game after Eloy Jimenez hit that ground ball up the middle that got through the middle infield and turned out to be a hustle double because Siri was late backing it up. And Cash pretty clearly just said he didn't like the way that he approached that ball. They pulled him from the game. And he didn't expect it to linger, something that he reiterated before today's game, said that was yesterday, it's over and done with, Siri's back in the lineup, they don't expect any carryover. We also spoke to Jose Siri about it after the game. You know, at first he was saying maybe they saw it a little bit differently from the dugout than he saw it unfolding on the field. He thought that the infield was going to get to it, which is why he was a little slow. But then he did admit a little later on in the interview that, you know, it was a learning experience and he was a little bit embarrassed by, you know, kind of the lack of hustle on that. So not something I necessarily expect to see again. It seems like it's been addressed, cleaned up, and dealt with the way that the Rays typically handle stuff like this.
The Rays are having a heck of a time hitting with runners in scoring position, Adam. They did a little bit better yesterday, though. I believe they were 5-for-13 in those situations. They still left a number of men on base, and it seems like almost every time that they get maybe a hit and a walk, and then you have runners at first and second and nobody out, they are just struggling to not only score runners but to even move the runners along.
Yeah, it's been a lot of strikeouts, it's been a lot of ground balls, it's been a lot of chasing, really, which is kind of the tell of a team that may be pressing at the plate in those situations when guys are getting out of their strike zone, especially when disciplined hitters, you know, like Yandy Diaz or even Randy Arozarena, you know, who has a pretty good track record of driving runners in, are getting out of their zone. They're not swinging at their pitches, they're reaching, they're trying to make something happen, and that's really shown up with runners on base and runners in scoring position especially. And you saw it last night, you know, they score 7 runs, but it still felt like they had a lot of missed opportunities. Cash said that after the game last night as well. And, you know, you can say, all right, well, they get to the game, they're in end of the game, they're in pretty decent position to win, but it's a whole different ball game if you're breaking it open early, if you're scoring a bunch of runs, if you're having big crooked innings that get the starting pitcher out of there and force a team to churn through their bullpen, and that affects the way that the Rays can use their bullpen as well. So they've really just got to do a better job capitalizing on opportunities, because you're right. I mean, they are getting guys on. You know, Richie Palacios was on base 6 times last night. Ben Roethlisberger was on 5 times. They are putting themselves in opportunities and positions to score. They're just really kind of disappearing in those moments where they have those, you know, kind of big at-bats where you're used to seeing guys come through. It just hasn't happened so far, and you know, that tends to be kind of cyclical. You go through hot and cold spells with runners in scoring position. It's hard to kind of draw any big conclusions, but if you had to pick one thing that stands out about the reason that they're not getting those consistent at-bats in those situations so far, it is that they're chasing, which would lead you to believe that guys are pressing and trying to do too much in those spots.
And how about the Rays bullpen, Adam? They have now allowed 13 runs, 10 of them earned over their last 18 innings. Their 8 blown saves are tied with the Marlins and Pirates for the most in Major League Baseball, and their bullpen ERA is 5.22. That's the 4th worst in the majors. What is going on with the bullpen? Obviously, Phil Maton served up that 2-run home run, the walk-off to Andrew Benintendi, but Pete Fairbanks is on the IL, Colin Pochet is on the IL, and I thought there were some flashes of good pitching last night from that bullpen. Sean Armstrong, Garrett Clevenger, even Jason Adam, who had that leadoff walk in the 9th inning, he still worked a pretty strong inning, I thought.
Yeah, and Kevin Kelly was awesome out of the bullpen for 2 innings, kind of saved the whole game for him at that point, it looked like. You're right. I mean, Sean Armstrong came in, gave up 2 inherited runs on, you know, a ground ball and a pop-up. He basically does his job there to mitigate hard contact. Clevenger gets a big strikeout. Kelly pitches well. Jason Adam works around that walk. And then really the only mistake was Phil Maton throwing that first pitch sweeper to Andrew Benintendi, which he pretty much immediately regretted after the game. He said he thought he got too cute trying to go with the sweeper to steal a strike. He needs to stick with his strengths, which is the fastball, curveball. And he said he feels really good about where his pitches are at right now in terms of the shape, what they're doing, the movement and things like that. He's just not executing, and that kind of seems to be the story for the Rays bullpen as a whole right now. Yes, you're without Pete Fairbanks, who is the highest leverage reliever and more of a traditional closer. Yes, you're now without Colin Pochet, who's on the IL with a back issue, who had also worked in high leverage spots. Those guys have given up, you know, a handful of runs early in the season as well. So that's one of those things that you kind of expect to get cleaned up as the season goes on. These guys have track records. You know, they pitched well in the past. Their stuff generally looks good. They're just not executing in big spots. And again, that's stuff that stands out a lot more when you're playing close games because your offense is unable to break it open and, you know, get some separation. So that's something that I think they expect to get right with the guys that they have, but there's no doubt it's been a huge issue and just something that I don't think anybody who follows this team necessarily saw coming heading into the season. We thought in spring training this bullpen was really going to be the strength of the group, if anything, but it's really been a surprising weakness to this point.
Well, you've been the strength of this group of two, Adam Berry. We so appreciate you joining us on This Week in Rays Baseball. Enjoy the rest of your time up there in the Windy City, and I'm telling you, go to Portillo's and get that Italian sandwich with the hot peppers and get the chocolate cake shake. You will not regret it.
Should I tell them you sent me, or how does that go?
Yeah, I think you might get the Adams Wall discount. Just ask nicely.
Will do.
All right, thanks very much, Adam. And we certainly appreciate Adam Berry's time on This Week in Rays Baseball. We also want to thank our other guests on today's show, including Rays right-hander Aaron Civale, who did pitch yesterday against the Chicago White Sox, Rays president Matt Silverman for providing us with an update on the historic gas plant district development, and Rays hitting coach Chad Mottola. If you ever have something you want to hear on the show, all you have to do is tweet me, and you can do so fairly easily at Chris Adams Wall, no hyphen there, and at Rays Radio. Special thanks to Jason Behringer back at our network studios, and Becca Carney, Jared Greenspan, and Max Tanzer for their assistance, plus additional help from Andy Freed, Neil Solons, and Chris Miller. I'm Chris Adams Wall. We'll see you next time. Enjoy the game, everybody.
Thank you for listening to This Week in Rays Baseball.
3-2 and 2 on. Swing and a miss. He got it with a slider. Colin Pochet gets the big K. And the Rays hold on with a 5-4 lead here in the 8th.
If you missed any of the show, catch it at RaysBaseball.com/radio.
Would you believe 13-0 to start the year?
Keep it right here. The Rays pregame show is next.